the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening at the Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, and it's a good thing I came back to the desk. I was losing, you would think that I'd be in, you know, I'd have a routine and I would be, no, it doesn't work that way. I get the littlest thing throws me off. The big problem this morning is Tina's phone. She left the phone and she's got alarms set for all of her class movements, you know, when she has to go from room to room. And so as a result, the thing has been beeping like every 40 minutes. And so I said, all right, I got to go get this phone. And so I went, and then I was trying to figure out if there was I can't turn off all her alarms. That'll be. It said like Rain Man and keep the notebook of offenses. That would be a so. Don't be annoyed these next 3 hours when you hear about every 35 or 38 minutes, I'll have to turn off her alarm. doesn't take much around here. We got a fun morning, I think, and you know it's that weekend. In fact, Hammer and I were talking yesterday afternoon and got an eclectic set of things to discuss with Rick, including the release of the Kentucky Downs schedule and $150,000. It's just crazed. $150,000 maiden races at Kentucky Downs this fall. But there's a whole bunch of things. So Hammer said it's a quiet weekend. And then when I started to poke around, I knew we would talk about the Stephen Foster preview card, certainly at Churchill. And you got a hat full of stakes, and they're okay. New York, obviously, everything is geared toward next Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And over the next couple of days, even ahead of Tuesday's draw for Belmont Day, Sunday is the draw. I was asked this question on Twitter. Sunday's the draw for the Friday card. So, and you got five stakes on Friday. It's not small, insignificant card on Friday. You know, so anybody that is making their way for Belmont Day, don't be shy about turning up on Friday. As well, but the third and even the Thursday card, I think, has got what? It's got the 2 2-year-old stakes. You got the Astoria and Tremont, and the Wonder again as well on Thursday. So, and then on Friday, Better Roses, the Gold Cup, the Intercontinental, the New York, and the True North. So Friday's card, you'll have that Sunday, probably around 3:30, 4 o'clock. And then from there, we'll start to dig in, be in New York on Monday, be in New York actually Sunday, but we'll start broadcasting from beautiful Belmont Park, where hopefully the wet weather will clear out. And before I give you the lineup, I will mention the decisions on turf, because it was, as I called it, a split decision. Today, races 2, 5, and 9 are off the grass, and they'll be run at the same distances they were carded. And the 4th and the 8th, they remain on the grass. And they're going to move the 4th to the widener. So you know, this is when races come off the turf like this, and it's also true at Saratoga, and of course now even at Aqueduct, you end up seeing one race on each course. And that yeah, that's a pretty good, at least, you know, you get a couple of turf races on the day. And that eighth race is a first level allowance that's quite good. The fourth is a second level, and you got a field of seven there. The eighth is a 10 pack, so, and a very nice race if you haven't looked at today. Now, we've been focused, of course, you heard it yesterday, we've been focused on Belterra and on Penn National for tonight. So you hopefully heard on the replay, or maybe you caught it on Pod or Archive, Dr. Gorham. We talked a little bit about that Best of Ohio card at Belterra, and tonight the Penn National action, which we just heard in the last hour with Todd Mostoller. All right, so we'll watch for we'll watch later for any changes. It's also Epsom Oaks Day. We will listen in to the Epsom Oaks at 11:30. And one thing I did not do as I prepare, Marty McGee is going to join us first. We'll actually have quite a bit of focus on the Churchill action in this first hour. Marty joins us in about 10, and Scott Shapiro after. Scully today. James is tied up, and Nick Tamaro. In fact, both of the voices from Sam Houston. We can't connect today, unfortunately. I guess there's an outside chance that Trey pops up, but he actually begged off with other obligations, because there is a terrific quarter horse. You got quarter horse stakes tomorrow at Sam Houston, arcing toward even bigger quarter horse action. So I had told Trey back, you know, when Sam Houston was wrapping up, that I would reach for him during, you know, quarter horse season. But neither he nor Nick are available today. But I did want to at least make people aware of that card tomorrow at SHRP. Dave Grenig later as well, third hour, Dave Grenig. I mentioned the Epsom Oaks, and I do want to see if Kev has released his action. I'm confident, not guaranteed, but I'm confident that he is. There it is, 45 minutes ago. Here you go. Retweeting now. Here is the long shot, lad. Here you go. For those of you that are following along on Twitter. There it is. All right. Beautiful. It's out. Long shot, lads. Oh, stay action. And let's see, out of curiosity, for those of you that are not going to get to Twitter. And, you know, in addition, I should mention, in addition to the Oaks, which goes at 11:30, there's also the Group 1 Coronation Cup this morning. And I had not really looked ahead, and it didn't come up with Nick Luck the other day. But here we go. Let's see what Kev's thoughts were. The fact the first just went. They're off running at Epsom. And the Oaks. Here we go. Let's get the Oaks in front of me. Beautiful. Here we go. The Epsom Oaks goes as the fifth race today. And Kev, his main play is Tranquil Lady, the nine. All right. Tranquil Lady. And this is Joseph O'Brien and a daughter of Australia. He's expecting high teens. Tom Marquand is aboard. And in addition, his other each way play, his bomber, is Kawita, the three. Tranquil Lady trading at about 18-1 in the market. And Kawita, this is Ed Walker with Crowley aboard, 50-1 morning line, and Kev says, basically trading in the 60s right now on the market. So the 9 is his main play, and the 3 is his reach for a price. All right? The Oaks goes, again, 11:30. The Coronation Cup, 10:10. And this one features the likes of Pile Driver, who, how old is he now? 5 years old, Pile Driver. You've got Appleby's got Manobo, the See the Stars with William Buick. And who else do we have? There's the High Definition in here. Field of Six in the Group 1 Coronation Cup. The mile and a half standard. So we'll listen into the Oaks, though. Also at a mile and a half. Gus is going to swing through today. I haven't had a chance to talk to Gus. There it is. There you go. There's the first Tina Bell. get a feel for Tina's schedule. 9:11 is the time, so she's switching classes. We can track Tina throughout the building. We're going to check in with Gus. He's got some plays for the weekend. I promised yesterday Rich Eng, given that we had that full schedule, including I hope that people found, I think they did, because I got some nice feedback. The people that appreciated the HISA registration process discussion with Joe Applebaum from NYFA, and I went through the registration. One thing that I've got to follow up. I did give everybody a tweet with the resources, with the links, the registration page, the trainer detail graphics, and the question and answer in Thoroughbred Daily News. I do also. I put up on that link. You'll see a picture that's actually from the New York Gaming Commission website, and I want to elaborate on that for those of you in New York that, like, I was very surprised that I couldn't find my license. In New York, you have two cards. You get your Gaming Commission license, and then there's your NYRA badge, you know, the licensing from the state, and then NYRA provides you, everybody's pal, Lou Cobell. And Lou prints you out the badge, and that, you know, that gets you around the racetrack. But the license is where you need your number that HISA is calling for. So if you are in New York and you're curious and don't have your license right at hand and you're struggling to find it, you can get it easily. I mean, it took me basically three clicks. Gaming Commission, then go to the databases, and then the databases gives you four potential clicks. There's a ruling database, there's an incident database, steroid administration log, and then it says search current horse racing licenses. That's what you want. Hit that. You type in, you don't even have to type in all the information, just type in your last name and it'll pop right up. And that, and the I think it's a 7-digit number. And that's what you need for your HISA registration. All right? So there's that info. In addition, going into the weekend, let's get a quick survey, because we won't necessarily get to everything that's going to go on this weekend. But you've got racing resuming today at Laurel. And, you know, I'll make this one quick aside. And actually, maybe Hammer even would follow up on this. If there's a circuit available, and I understand, particularly in California right now, where, you know, Southern California, you got the Del Mar, the two Del Mar meets, you got the stops at Los Al. But, you know, this long, long, long Santa Anita season, it kind of wears people down. And it, you know, the changeover, it just refreshes. It's just, refreshing. And I'll give you an example. Laurel, racing goes back to Laurel today. And if you look at those two cards already, today and tomorrow, they're nice. I mean, frankly, the Pimlico meet was quite nice. But you got two nice cards at Laurel to get things going, including two-year-olds today to kick things off. So I just, everybody needs that. You know, it's one of the real luxuries in New York is the three racetracks. And at some point, we'll end up probably with just the two, with just Belmont and Saratoga. But even in that scenario, in the winter, there's probably going to be a synthetic track, for part of the winter season or as an option. And the interminable meets like this are tough on everybody. Santa Anita, tomorrow you've got the Desert Stormer, which is, in fact, both stakes have five tomorrow. And it's frustrating. The Desert Stormer going six, and then the Cinema, which of course was a standard at Hollywood, going a mile and an eighth on the grass for the 3-year-olds, where that D'Amato Balnikoff comes back again, who's been second twice so far in North America, but feels like a horse that is going somewhere. So I don't know if we're going to talk about the Santa Anita action. Elsewhere, I got the Royal North up at Woodbine, and then tomorrow the Bell Mahone, stakes-wise. Desert Code tomorrow at Santa Anita. Monmouth kind of keeps generating and moving into the season with the Mr. Prospector tomorrow, and then on Sunday, and come back with the Smart and Classy. So yeah, there's quite a bit. The Obeya runs, by the way, on Wednesday next week at Delaware, as they start to feather in the stakes calendar. All right, Case, let's reach for Marty, get him in here, and we'll start talking about the Churchill card, particularly tomorrow. And you know, I don't know if Marty has gotten much into it, but we didn't get a chance yesterday, and I meant to. The Jack Harlow Drake video that released on Wednesday. If you haven't seen it, it's quite something. And they filmed it on Derby Day. Jack Harlow really celebrating essentially Louisville in general with this video. And the video, the song is called Churchill Downs, and it's quite a spectacle. If you haven't seen it, it's five minute track, and just based on people's reaction, I mean, anybody from the Ville is beside themselves, and Harlow, is celebrated as somebody who, you know, really brings attention to, you know, to town. But this is, you know, this is nice. They're going to get some eyes on it that some people otherwise wouldn't necessarily be aware. Marty McGee is joining us. Marty, have you seen the Jack Harlow Drake video yet? The Churchill Downs release from Wednesday?
Is there one or two of them? I think there's at least one. Yeah, I've seen one of them. It was like 30 seconds.
Well, no. Now the full song got released. You know, the full release came, you know, later on Wednesday afternoon, and literally in I would say, because I was checking like every hour, it was getting 150,000, 125,000 views every hour. And it's beautifully shot. I mean, it's a real celebration, not just of Derby Day and Churchill, but there's scenes at the Hillerich and Bradsby at the Slugger factory. There's clips from Thunder. It's a real spectacle for Louisville.
Yeah,
and the Downs.
I mean, it dwarfs. I mean, the kind of numbers that Jack Harlow attracts dwarfs anything that in our business, Vic. So hopefully it translates into future fans for horse racing.
Now, just refreshed, here it is, 3 million views in 3 days, in 2.5 days. And the best part, though, actually, is reading, like on Twitter, you're reading the comments, and anybody that's from Louisville is just tickled. And there's a great portion of it where Harlow's mother is featured, and she's dancing with Drake. And how they pulled this off, Marty, I actually reached out to Gary Palmisano. How they pulled this off production-wise on Derby Day is probably a story in itself.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of coordinating amongst the chaos there. You know, I've got a Courier Journal article about this whole thing, and it's 5 minutes and 8 seconds, and it says right here one of it is from the 128 for 7 seconds. Harlow flashes an official Kentucky Derby 2022 racing program. The only thing that could have been better is if he had flashed the daily racing form. However,
it would have had to have been smuggled in.
Not necessarily smuggled. You can bring him in plain view. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen it, I should have already sent a link to it. Here's a comment. It's perfect. As a Louisville kid, this video is everything. Cinematography went crazy. Had chills for 5 minutes straight. It's beautifully, beautifully done. And I know people, you know, in fact, Casey could even chip in on this. You know, I know that Rick Ross had that video that he did at Gulfstream, and everybody was like, "Oh, did you see the Rick Ross? You know, this is going to be great." And some people had those kinds of, you know, kind of eye rolling, saying, "Well, what is it going to do for racing?" You know, if it draws some attention, if you know, anybody that sees it and is interested or captivated, you know, they know where to find us.
It's like I say about trying anything new in terms of racing. What can it hurt? I mean, it's not going to turn people off. I mean, if anything, it will get some people interested. I'm going through the timeline of this thing. At 4:47, Maggie Harlow drops an F-bomb talking to Drake. Here's another one. Old Forester Turf Classic shown in the background for 7 seconds. Starting gate opens for the 2022 Kentucky Derby, 219. Yeah. Oh, it's got to be awesome. I have seen clips of it. I haven't seen this whole thing.
You'll enjoy it. It's and I did see where, you know, where real fans of both, of Harlow and Drake. I saw some people say that this is the verse that Drake drops, they say is particularly strong from him, and I haven't pulled up the lyrics yet to, you know, to basically digest everything that's laid out. It's long and it's involved, but it's really something to look at. I'm interested to see what other reaction comes from around the industry. Marty, in the meantime, there's some pretty good action tomorrow. We got Foster Preview Day.
Yeah, we got 6 stakes. Races 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and they're all designed, Steve, as preps for 4 weeks later, the July 2nd Stephen Foster Day card. You have the Blame, which is ungraded and has the Grade 1 Cigarro Mile winner American Revolution in it. That's race 10. That's the Blame is a prep for the Stephen Foster, and then earlier in the day, the Shawnee, which I believe is race 7. Yeah. Pauline's Pearl, a last out winner of the Grade 1 La Troyenne on Oaks Day. I wrote, and I can't remember, and I defy anybody else who can remember, the last time two Grade 1 winners showed up on the same card in ungraded races in their very next starts. So, I can't believe it's ever happened. But anyway, I had written my whole thing yesterday, my whole advance for these races on on that fact. And then Elliot Walden told me, no, American Revolution is going to run in a Sunday allowance race. It's a four other than, you know, he went through some conditions as a New York bred, so they don't count. And so I was like, oh, man. So I tore it up, rewrote it. Then he texted me back and said, no, we're going to stay in the stake. So that race did go for Sunday. The race did go for Sunday with a field of seven, but he's not in it, and so he is running. American Revolution is making his first start in precisely 6 months in the $200,000 Blame Stakes tomorrow at Churchill.
Well, let's here. Let me pull out the PPs, and in addition, actually, to the stakes action, there even early on the card, to be honest, there's that 7 furlong maiden group that looks interesting, where you got some horses with what looks to be upside, and you've also got. You got, I think, 2 firsters. Yeah, McPeak has got a gun runner filly, 10-1, and Michael Tomlinson down on the rail, strikingly a mizzen mast as well. And Pletcher with a second timer. Al Stahl, who got off the. How about Al getting off the duck with AJ Foyt the other day?
I wrote about it. It's in the what? Is it in the Thursday or the, I think it's in the Thursday form. It was in yesterday's form. Yeah, and you know. I said, did you call him? And he said, no, I didn't want to bother him. He said he had 4 cars in the race. You know, he's a car owner. You know, A.J. Foyt is now 87 years old. And then I went back and looked up Tony Foyt, his son, who was pretty prominent around here, late 70s, early 80s. Looked up all his records, put a little bit of that in the story. But Al was thrilled to get off the 0 for 30 streak. But, yeah, he really shrugged that off. He goes, with the stable of our nature, you know, it's going to happen once in a while. So, and he pointed out a couple other guys who had been in kind of a slump. But anyway, I thought it was really a kind of a serendipitous kind of victory when that horse got a tremendous ride from Colby Hernandez, won by a nostril, and ended the streak for Al. All it was just about an hour or two after the actual Indy 500 had ended, and I like to play $20 or $30 on just a random driver didn't win this year, but you know, I'd kind of keep my eyes peeled on that Sunday of Memorial Day for the Indy 500. Actually, our boss at Daily Racing Form, Jody Swaby, actually made the trip from Connecticut to the race. He loves car racing, and he and his dad and some other folks went to the race again on Sunday. So. You know, there's some crossover there with DRF.
Nice. And that's something have you ever been? Have you gone to the 500?
You know what? I did. I went about 3 or 4 years ago. The way to do it, Vic, is you take a bus shuttle from one of the downtown hotels that's maybe 10 miles to the track. And otherwise, if you're in a private car, you got to park a long way away. But this is the buses get preference. The shuttles, they take you right to the gate and all that. I remember I loved doing the buying tickets from scalpers. We got in, I think, for $40 a piece and had a decent seat on the first turn, and it was quite the spectacle. I had never been actually when I was a young child from the end of first grade to the beginning of fifth grade. My family lived in an Indianapolis suburb. It was in the southeastern quadrant. So actually growing up, I remember everybody, it's kind of like Derby in Louisville, the Indy 500 in Indianapolis. People have backyard parties, et cetera. And, you know, it's like what do they do in Australia on that one Tuesday? The not the Gold Cup, but the Melbourne Cup. It's like that in Indianapolis on the day of the 500.
I said the exact same thing yesterday to John Dooley. This, of course, his first season in Indy, and he went to the parade. And I made that same, you know, that same connection that it what the 500 is to Indy, the, you know, Derby is to the Ville, and you know, as like a centerpiece. I've not been, and I It's funny, when I first took an interest in motorsports as a kid, it was open wheel. But then when I was with Procter & Gamble and got sent to Charlotte, you're literally, knee-deep in Winston Cup at that time. And we had cars at Procter. And I ended up being in charge of the catering at the tracks for the customers. And I had a lot of fun doing it. And I got to see quite a bit. We had Tim Richmond, the late and doomed Tim Richmond, in the Folgers machine, and we had Darrell Waltrip in the Tide car, and who am I forgetting? We had somebody else, Crisco. We had Buddy Baker. I think the first team was Buddy Baker with the Crisco car, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had was done by the time I got to Charlotte. But between Charlotte and Daytona, and where else did we do the cat? Talladega, and my favorite actually was Darlington, the Southern 500, which is a real old school. It's an old school track, and. That was unbelievable, actually, in a lot of ways. That, to me, was the best experience, was the Southern Five.
That's in South Carolina, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, growing up in Indianapolis, there was no bigger name than A.J. Foyt. Although I think his last of four Indy 500 wins, I think it was in 1967. But my family lived there from 66 to 69. It was A.J. Foyt, Mario Andretti, and the Unser brothers. Those were everybody's heroes.
Big time. I was a big Andretti fan, and I tried to reach AJ to get him on this week. So that's been an elusive reach for me over the years. I've wanted to get him on because I know he really enjoys it. And in fact, Sunday was the anniversary, right? Of the fourth one. Well, let's do some capping here, Marty, and start with the where are we going? Start with the regret.
Regret is race. What is that? The fifth? Oh yeah,
that's the fifth.
Yeah. McCulloch, who was second behind that Walsh buzzsaw on Oaks Day in the Edgewood. She's got to be 3 to 5 in here. I've got her. McCulloch is her name. Field of six. Got her over beside herself and Candy Rate.
Going a mile and an eighth, and we've got a... What'd you do in that first level allowance, actually? That's an interesting group.
Is that race six?
That is race six.
I've got Dallas Stewart with Strava, who I think won on debut here. He hasn't come back to do that since then, but Strava was kind of a fringe horse for some of the classics, for some of the classics preps this winter. I'm going to give him and Johnny V. Johnny V, one of the three New York guys coming in here tomorrow. Johnny V, Luis Saez, and Javier Castellano all be pretty prominent in all these stakes tomorrow.
Very much. The seventh is the Shawnee, and this group of six, as you mentioned, you got about as big a name, given the grade one win of Pauline's Pearl in the La Trienne, and Crazy Beautiful shows up for McPeak. She's All Wolf is kind of a personal favorite for Donnie Kay. Army Wife for Maker. Is this just Pauline's Pearl to push around?
Yeah, you would think. I mean, Army Wife is in the same league as Pauline's Pearl, but she's at the major disadvantage of making her first start of the year. And it just makes all the sense in the world for Steve to run Pauline's Pearl in this race because they have Clairiere. Steve and Stone Street have Clairiere for the Ogden Phipps a week from Saturday. And she doesn't have to do the ship to and fro. The timing is better with the 4 weeks to the Florida Lee for her. And now they've got the grade one with her, too, in the La Trienne. So she figures at a $3 mutual in here over, I've got her over Army Wife on the comeback.
the Arlington, the Grade 3, and we're getting a steady diet now of the former Arlington-based stakes. Marty, the Modesty came Derby weekend. Here's the Arlington, mile and a 16th for the boys, and again, field of six, where certainly field pass, the maker is pretty much a presence in all of these. Get Smokin' comes back from the try in the Alquaz and stretches back out. Gray's Fable for Lynch. I don't know if he's just saddling Gray's Fable. This is a longtime Atfield runner, and it could be that with Roger back up in Toronto, this one maybe was left with Lynch, I would guess.
I think so. I think he'll probably go back to Canada with Roger. But in any case, this is really an interesting race in that how's he going to set up? I actually picked Get Smoke and thinking that maybe he can get away from Grace Fable or just outlast him. Brian was really talking up Admission Office to me. He was supposed to run a week ago last night in a turf allowance, but it came off the grass, so he just said, heck, I'll just run him in the stake, the following Saturday. So here he is. If it gets too hot up front between Get Smokin' and Grace Fable, I think it would set up for a horse like Admission Office. But, again, you got a couple of other interesting ones in there with Field Pass, as you said, for Maker, and then Floriform, the Mott Judmont horse who ran big last time out, too.
We get to the Aristides, and this is, at least we've got, we got a fuller field in here, got some familiar sprint names, and let's see, let me turn over, take a look at my my Hermes selection, and I don't see Miles Ahead. You got Samantha and your brother taking over the West Coast Invader. Miles Ahead, Marty. No good? No
well,
taste?
Well, I mean, I remember riding this winter about this horse when Eddie Pleasa had him, and he won the Gulfstream Sprint. And then I didn't know until he showed up in the entries that Samantha had gone out and bought this horse privately. And he ran one time with Brian Corner. Now my brother has it, and Talamo rides. The thing about this race, Steve, is there's not a lot of front speed in there. So I guess that either Miles Ahead for my brother or Top Gunner, the last out winner of the St. Matthews, one of them has to make the front, you would think. But that doesn't necessarily preclude a horse like Necker Island, who I thought was just huge last fall in the Bet on Sunshine. I've got it Necker Island with Bob's Edge, who was terrific down at Oaklawn all winter. So I've got it Necker Island, Bob's Edge, and Bango, the Churchill loving Foley steed. So I've got it a 4-5-1 in the 34th running of the Aristides. The first running of the Aristides, by the way, Bick, was won by one Paul J. McGee with a horse named Bet the Pot in 1989, ridden by Charlie Woods.
I love it. Speaking of Foley, had Greg the other day to talk about Sconson's win. We had so much fun, and Ron Moquette made an appearance involving a misshipped Arky bread, which got a rise out of people. They got a big kick. I don't know if you that pretty funny story with that B.D. Valesky horse. It's pretty good, actually. When Valesky wins, you can have Foley tell you the story and work it into the paper. The blame. Here's the prep for the Foster, and this is good. And now with your confirmation that American Revolution is going to make his 4-year-old debut in here, that only enhances it further.
Well, they wanted to run him last weekend on New York Showcase Day in the Commentator, but the Commentator
didn't fill, so
they went ahead and made this the alternative, with eyeballing the Sunday allowance I was referring to. But bottom line is he's going to run. I've got Scalding beating him, though. 6-month layoff and all that, and Scalding has just been terrific all year, 4-for-4 for Shug, having won the Challenger on the Tampa Bay Derby undercard, and then the Ben Ally at Keeneland in what was a really a terrific field. A couple of those others comes back, Dynamic One and Proxy. It's a pretty good race. Great stepping stone toward the Foster, which, of course, is supposed to get both Mandaloon and Hot Rod Charlie. So I'm sure we'll get two or three out of this race, too.
And Proxy at 9-2, maybe looking for kind of an inside-out trip from down inside. Proxy might be the value in here, no?
I would think so. I mean, he's got to be 5 or 6-1, I would think. American yeah. Revolution, he's the X factor. I mean, he was just terrific in winning the Cigar Mile, no less as the favorite, too, which says something for him. But what a standout New York bred he is. I'm sure that Todd has him ready to go.
That's certainly the highlight of the card. Although the Audubon came up very good, and here's 11, including the likes of James Jones for Chad Brown, made 9-2 on the line. Smoke and Tea for the aforementioned Claude Ray McGahee III. Grand Sonata for Mandy Pope and Todd Pletcher. This is the homebred coming out of the Transylvania and had really had a good start to the season with those back-to-back wins at Gulfstream in the Dania Beach and in the Kitten's Joy. What you doing here? This is all right, this race.
That's who I've got. It's Grand Sonata with a good sneaky inside trip under Tyler, who, is, as always, is on his game. You know, I just kind of remember Grand Sonata from over the winter down at Gulfstream, how good I thought those races were and how good he was. His buyers don't necessarily reflect it, but, you know, you got the Todd versus Chad show here with Grand Sonata as my top pick over James Jones for Chad Brown's second. So, yeah, I got it a 2-9 in the in what's the dip really has to be the deepest stake of the day in the finale, the Audubon.
What do you expect, Speaking Scout, the Eclipse Grand Motion Mr. Speaker gelding to? What kind of price are we going to get on him?
Let's see here, Beck. Let me get down to this race.
6-1 morning line.
You know what? I've got the wrong day up here. I'm gonna have to take the fifth on that question, Beck.
All right. I just need a 6-1 morning line coming off an allowance win and was beaten 3 in the Kitten's Joy. Got almost a 3-month break, and I'm intrigued by Speaking Scout in here, getting the classic Luis Saez kind of stalk and go ride. There's really not a ton of pace in here. And I wonder if Castellano maybe wants to go with Summer Anthem for Jordan Wyckoff. This is interesting. James Jones. How about Ricardo Santana Jr. Riding for Chad with the Peter Brandt homebred. This is a good race.
That might be orchestrated by Matt Musicar. You know, he's had Tyler for many years now, and now he's got he took over Ricardo's book, First of the Meet, so maybe he's making some headway with some barns that Ricardo had not really ridden for much previously.
Interesting. Nice. Glad you slipped that in. All right, Marty, it's an eclectic day. There's some, you know, some spots that you know, we have deeper fields, which we appreciate, and then a couple where, you know, some of the narrow, a little more narrow field to deal with. But overall, it should be a fun afternoon. Let me get some other coverage. You basically were shepherding the Derby winner before he headed for New York. Some thoughts about monitoring his time at back at Churchill, and certainly that workout. I mean, it sure feels like all systems are go for Rich Strike.
Well, I mean, think about it, Steve. He was not going to win the Preakness, and it was such a clever move, really. I know it kind of depletes the balloon for the Triple Crown, et cetera, when the Derby winner skips the Preakness on the rare occasion that they do. But, you know, in terms of doing what's best for this horse, Eric, everything's gone perfectly for him. You know, the horse even kind of drops Eric's jaw on occasion. He's like, I just can't believe this. I can't believe I won the Derby. I can't believe what a nice horse this is. I've never been around anything like this. The first of his two workouts here at Churchill, 10 minutes after the race, after the horse had cooled out a couple of laps and then was getting his bath, and he wasn't blowing hard at all, and Eric was just amazed by the comportment of this horse and how classy he is. So I'm for him. I know he's going to be 5, 6, 7 to 1, whatever, and the Belmont, that generally left-field closers such as him tend to not do well in the race. Nonetheless, we're going to forge ahead and be rooting for Rich Strike.
You know, Marty, on that topic, after watching that workout, and what's most notable about it versus his workout before Derby, where he basically went slow early and then picked it up and finished with a flourish. This workout was different because he was in stride very, very quickly in that opening eighth and even. And Sid Fernando and I were kind of kicking around Belmont history. Don't you think he's going to be a little bit more forward and, in fact, maybe even aggressively forward next Saturday based on what we just saw from that workout, right?
I wouldn't necessarily think so, no. I think Sonny Leone will get into his head right away, and he'll get him into a relaxed rhythm shortly after they break. And I think he'll be at least 10 or 12 lengths out of it at some point early in the race.
Speaking of Sonny Leone, have we heard suggestion that they were trying to line up some rides for him for Thursday, Friday to get him acclimated to the expansive oval?
I have not heard an update on that, but Eric mentioned it at least twice that he's intent on getting that done. So Eric flew up and met the horse on, what day did he leave? Tuesday, so he was there early. He was there early Wednesday. Eric's been there since Tuesday evening, so I'm sure that he'll probably have a mount or two or three for him before the Belmont.
Very good. And we'll talk to Dave Grenig at 11 o'clock this morning. Dave will update on the daily activities of the Derby winner since his 1 a.m. arrival the other morning. And from what we've seen, I mean, he's actually had to deal with a wet racetrack in terms of the mornings. He's been on the training track, and we'll see if maybe this morning he went to the main. We'll get more of that from Dave Grenig on the grounds at Elmont. And finally, Marty, we should note that today you got a pretty heady Friday card for those that haven't looked, including the presence of Gunite in the seventh today, that non-winners of three lifetime, where Call Me Midnight shows up, Tejano Twist for Calhoun. This is quite interesting. Michael Tomlinson, Conaher, and Surfer Dude. You also are going to see some other stakes runners on this Friday afternoon card at the Downs.
Yeah, and by the way, Dave, Rich Strike did already train. Dave put a little footage on Twitter about him. It was a sloppy, sealed track this morning, and Rich Strike, I think, did a once-around mile-and-a-half or so gallop. So there's that. As far as today, I wish Hidden Stash had won last time out because I had the pick five with Gray's Fable and Hidden Strike, and Gray's Fable was 9-5, and Hidden Strike was 13-1, so he's my best bet today. I lost a $20 bet to Jay Priven about him as head-to-head versus Hidden Stash versus Rombauer in the bluegrass of, what, 2021. So, yeah, that's $20 I'll never see again. But anyway, we got three straight allowances today, races 6, 7, and 8. Paul McGee should win the fifth with Classy Mist dropping, and surely they'll be shaking for her. But Cocktail Moments back in the eighth today. Call Me Midnight, who was on the Triple Crown trail for Keith DeSormo, he's in the seventh. Hidden Stash, my best bet, in the sixth. And the big money races around here are just amazing. And what this historical horse racing revenue has done for the circuit is just, it's almost surreal. You know, the $150,000, they put that out yesterday for the maiden races for Kentucky Bred at Kentucky Downs at their six or seven day meet coming up in September. It's just it's a year-round extravaganza around here, Big.
We're going to talk to Hammer, bottom of hour two, about the Kentucky Downs schedule that dropped. Marty, this was great. I appreciate it, and we will catch up. Well, I don't know. Next week is New York action. A couple of weeks.
I'm getting my knee replaced on Tuesday, Beck. So I'll be out for a little bit.
All right. Safe travels with that, and quick recovery. And are they doing that at Rude and Riddle? You got Dr. Bramlage?
No, Haggard Davidson McGee. Are you kidding me?
Thanks a lot, the great Marty McGee, DRF McGee, and one and only America's Turf Authority since Marty was in short pants. too funny. Scott Shapiro is going to swing by here. We'll get some Shap action. As well, Marcus Hirsch, top of hour two, probably a couple minutes into hour two. I'm glad that Marty mentioned that first level allowance for the Phillies going the one turn mile. Cocktail Moments, who I really took a liking to before the Kentucky Oaks, and she draws the rail, and I 7-5 is blech, but Cocktail Moments back and Hidden Stash. I should have, when Marty mentioned Hidden Stash, I should have pimped him on Vicky Oliver going to Monmouth and winning a stake. Scott Shapiro joins us. Scott Shap, 34, of course. Shap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm great, and let's dive into it. We've touched on, I told everybody this was going to be the Downs hour with Marty in front of you, but you've got to get ready for the broadcast day. In fact, let's get some Friday, since we just came off of that with Marty. Why don't you follow up with your Friday pushes?
Yeah, the main push today is in race 8. It's a first level allowance event for 3-year-old fillies, and Cocktail Moments is going to be the heavy favorite in here, coming off the effort in the Kentucky Oaks, getting some class relief. Certainly makes a lot of sense. Should appreciate the cutback, but I like Hardy Constitution, Steve, number the 5 horse in here. Excuse me. 2 good sprints to start her career, including the maiden breaker back in late February. Then tried the Grade 3 Fantasy. Stalked early in her first try versus winners and first try at 2 turns before tiring late. Pretty forgivable effort. Didn't get LASIK that day. Now cuts back to the one-turn mile, gets LASIK again. And I don't see a lot of speed in here, so I think Martin Garcia should be able to make a loose and lonely lead with the Pennsylvania Bred and Joe Sharp winning races in bunches here. So I like Hardy Constitution. Hopefully we get somewhere near her 8-1 morning line price. I'm not sure if you had any thoughts in there.
Well, I actually hadn't looked much at the Friday action. I was focused on Belterra and Penn National with the stakes cards, but I did want to bring it up because, you know, Marty had written about these 3 strong allowances, the 6th, 7th, and 8th, that feature prominent stake horses. So I asked him about it, and it's funny, the prominent stake horses in question are all, you know, going to be short priced. As much as I like Cocktail Moments, I don't blame you for, you know, for trying to find something else as a price option.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, she's going to be rolling. If the pace is hot, she should win. But I just think, you know, likely to get a little overbet, even if she's the likeliest winner. Grade 7 was not a great betting race, just a 5-horse field, but you get Calming Midnight coming back after the disappointing effort in Lexington cutting back, and then you got Goodnight, the hopeful winner. But Surfer Dude and Conniger are interesting, too. Surfer Dude should get a perfect pocket trip. And then Conniger, a tough read, but trying to figure out why the big move forward last time at Keeneland. The best I could come up with is first time with blinkers on the dirt, perhaps might have been the secret potion, if you will. But appears to be training very well. May get overlooked in the wagering, although it's hard to know if that's going to happen for sure with that big number.
What are you doing in the 6th?
In the 6th, I thought Hidden Stash made a lot of sense, but 5-2 a little short. He's never really had a contentious early pace in any of those three turf races, and still has hit the board in all three. Last time out, Gray's Fable set the pace that day, and he almost won. But I think Ombre is an interesting alternative, 6-1 on the line. And, first start for Cherie DeVoe, run some good races in New York and Florida. The cutback should help coming out of a mile and a quarter race, and just think the price should be a lot better. But I'm going to probably try to get through that too deep. You're looking for another option at a price, maybe 2nd of July, who does benefit from the scratch of the 1A Kentucky Pharaoh, should be able to either go to the front or sit right off the pace of long shot Jammer's Justice, but ran a pretty good third against the flow on May 12th at the mile and an eighth distance. So that was against Lesser, but maybe a horse sitting on a good effort.
Yeah. All right. Anything else from today?
I think that's about it as far as strong pushes of any sort. I think some decent racing, though, outside of the allowance events, but more spread races probably around. One thing I will mention, we had Norm Cassie on Inside Churchill Downs last Friday night, and figured I'd share. He seemed to be high on South Lawn, who is the 3-1 morning line favorite in race four, a first-time starter. By Pioneer of the Nile, pretty solid pedigree. Norm's been doing great with these firsters. Florent Giroux jumps aboard, so assume that she should show some speed, assuming she gets out of the gate well. I just thought I'd pass that along, even though she won't be a great price.
No, that's can be helpful. They all can't be 15-1 shots.
Correct.
You know, exactly. All right, let's move to the fun Saturday card, and as we said with Marty, and we kind of stressed, there's the handful, the middle part of the card, the shorter fields with some of the big names, but there are spots, no doubt, on the card to take some shots.
Yeah, no, well put for sure. I think my first shot's going to come before the stakes action in race three, Filly and Mare, sprint 7 furlongs over the main track, and I think number 12 Smugness, I don't know if we'll get 12-1, but a very forgivable sixth place effort on debut for Cherie DeVoe, the daughter of Gunrunner, broke slow from the inside, never easy to break from the inside on debut on one turn, and then especially when you break slow, and she showed some professionalism under Brian Hernandez, moving up the inside, making up some ground, and kind of bobbing and weaving in the lane. I thought it was a pretty promising effort, and now you move from an inside draw to an outside draw, and I think she looked like she's pretty serious, and I thought she got a great learning experience on debut at Keeneland on April 28th. Patna won that race, a nice-looking Brad Cox runner. I thought it was a pretty solid field, so we'll take a chance with Smugness, the 12 at 12-1. In race three to get things started. And then we get, I guess, to the stakes action. I didn't see, the regret. I thought McCulloch had a pretty good excuse and still ran well, finishing 2nd in the Edgewood. The winter New Year's Eve ran huge for Brendan Walsh, but that was definitely an outside speed, an outside bias turf course that day, as a couple of days were during Derby week and since. And McCulloch was on the inside most of the way. And once, she got out into the clear, she finished very well, but it was kind of too late to get to New Year's Eve. So I think McCulloch will be tough, but looking forward to seeing Walkathon beside herself as well. Walkathon has been a new horse since moving over to the turf, was highly regarded for Ian Wilkes and Wyndham Thoroughbreds, and was really washed out last time, Steve. I think that was a Downs After Dark card. And did not, I don't know her that well to know if that's normal, but was concerned, and she kept getting bet, and she won going away at 4-5. So I'll be looking out for that, but nothing too crazy in the regret to start the stakes action.
One note about the regret. We just talked about cocktail moments out of the Oaks today in the eighth. Tomorrow, there's also an Oaks Exeter that is notable, and it's Candy Raid. The DeSormo, right. Don't Tell My Wife, Stables filly that won the Bourbonette Oaks. And not only did she win the Bourbonette Oaks, but she ran very well, was that on the synthetic? I'm thinking about fairgrounds. If she run on the, I can't remember if she ran on the grass. There's a race that, well, I'm going to have to go look her up, but I made a little tee on around Candy Raid, you know, getting on the grass here. Candy Raid is at least worth, you know, considering. I'm intrigued by. But, and actually, no, she ran in an allowance at Fairgrounds on the grass and did not fare all that great, and actually tried the grass back at Ellis
back to her
2-year-old year. But the, you know, the Bourbonette effort on the synthetic hints at turf interest, but we'll see. Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting consideration in here.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, she's not really bred to run on the turf, and for Keith to throw her on the turf, not necessarily something he looks to do way back at Ellis in the beginning part of her career. So perhaps he thought she was a turf horse and pretty cagey horseman, and Keith DeSormo usually knows his stock pretty well. So
yeah.
She's going to have a lot of ground to make up, but maybe with Lola Flo setting the pace and beside herself there, maybe she'll get a pretty decent setup for that late run.
Yeah, I thought her presence was worth noting. There you go.
There you go. I do think race six is the last of the non-stakes races, but it's a good one at the one-turn mile. I think Strava's going to love the cutback to the one-turn mile. I think he ran two really good races to start his career. Decent, not tremendous quality fields. And then, understandably, tried two turns, thinking Derby, as Dallas Stewart loves to do, as we all do, actually. But kind of looked like a horse that, you know, wanted to cut back, especially last time in the Lexington when getting blinkers for the first time was involved early, tired late. But now gets Lasix and blinkers together for the first time and draws the inside under Johnny V. I think the pace should be pretty contentious, and he should get kind of the right trip along the inside under the Hall of Famer, so we'll go with Strava in the sixth at 9-2 as part of the coupled entry, although we'll see if the other part, if McLaren Vale gets in, that kind of takes away the gambling appeal of Strava, because that entry would get overbet probably.
Well, and in fact, Marty went Strava as well.
Okay, good to hear. Never mind having him on my side.
No, exactly.
All right. And then, as you mentioned, you know, the Shawnee is one of, like the Regret, looks pretty formful. You know, I always get a little worried about horses that win a grade one and then they drop in class and are pointing to another big race, with the Fleur-de-Lis being the prep for this, the Shawnee. But it just looks like Pauline's Pearl just continues to move forward and could probably win this race with a B effort. I guess if I was looking for an alternative, I think Army Wife has some upside, although the first start off the bench, and again, probably another horse that, you know, they're hoping to get ready for the Fleur-de-Lis. I'm sure they wouldn't mind winning this. And she's run well over the Churchill Downs main track, but it's going to be tough to play against Pauline's Pearl with any sort of excitement.
No doubt.
Let's see. The Arlington's a little bit interesting. Looking at some horses that I think maybe either are prepping for the Wise Dan, like in the case of Admission Office, who was supposed to run in an allowance event last week, and then it was washed off. I was assuming that was going to be the prep for the Wise Dan. Now they go into the Arlington here. Hasn't run in, you know, well over a year, and probably needs the race. But, you know, we'll be rolling late if the pace is honest, which it probably should be with Get Smokin' and Gray's Fable in there. But I thought Floriform was a horse, maybe a now-type horse. That was a good effort against second-level allowance foes at Keeneland. Cellist, who finished second that day, came back to win the Louisville here. And the trip should be a good one. So maybe Floriform is the one that to take in the Arlington, and then a horse like Admission Office, one to keep an eye out on as we move toward the Wise Dan on that Stephen Foster card.
Nice. All right. Rounded out with the late pick three, Aristides Blame, Audubon.
All right. The Aristides, I'm going to try to spring the upset with Jalen Journey. I don't see a lot of speed in here. I think Top Gunner might be on the lead, but everything went real well for him last time out in the St. Matthews. He ran well, and he's looking to make it three in a row, but I'm going to look to a price. I do think Bob's Edge is the best horse in here. I just don't know if he's going to get enough pace to run at. So his price might be a little too short. I picked him for second, Top Gunner for third. But Jalen Journey, third start off the bench for Steve, and hasn't been close to the pace in the last two races because they were running much faster early track, early first quarter miles. And I think this one, especially last time out when he finished second to Heart Rhythm, they went 21-2. But I think he's got the tactical speed under Ricardo Santana Jr., who returns the ride for Steve here. I'm not sure if that's the first mount this meet with those two, but I think it is. And he was aboard the career best effort back in August at Saratoga when he won by over eight lengths. So I'm hoping Ricky can sit right off of Top Gunner and 10-1, maybe a big effort third off the bench.
Nice.
And then, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm just saying, go ahead. You know, I like the idea.
Yeah, I just don't know if I trust, you know, I love Bob's Edge, but when he doesn't get the pace to chase, it's a little challenging, and I think the rest of the field pretty even, so wanted to take a price in there. And then in the Blame, which is one of three bet-back races on Twin Spires, races 4, 6, and 10 are the Saturday ones. I didn't mention it. Friday, the bet-back races are 5, 8, and 9, so the Hardy Constitution race is one of the bet-back races, so good opportunity if you kind of want to bet Hardy Constitution, a little scared of Cocktail Moments. If Cocktail Moments wins and you get second or third, you get your money back. So not a bad deal on Twin Spires at all. And in the Blame, I like Proxy. Scalding and American Revolution are certainly major players. Maybe American Revolution will need the race, setting up for the Stephen Foster. And Scalding, it's hard to knock, just keeps moving forward steadily for Shug. But I thought Proxy at a price, a little bit of a better price, worth consideration because I think you can forgive the Ben Ali. It was kind of a dull third, but that was a huge effort to finish second in the New Orleans Classic to Olympiad. So the regression off of that effort was probably logical. And now you get the rail and mile and an eighth shouldn't be a problem. So I think Proxy of the options in the Blame is the best value. I'd be surprised if one of the top three doesn't win. And maybe you can sneak Super Stock into the number after that wide voyage throughout in the Oaklawn where he looked like he was looming big and then just got tired, but maybe a lot of that was because of the ground loss. And right. In the Audubon, I thought it was wide open, Steve. I mean, I think you can go several ways. I'll be spreading super deep to close out the horizontals, but lukewarm top pick is Summer Anthem, who I thought ran real big in the first trial on turf, ran second on debut at Turfway Park to Monologue, who came back to win here a couple weeks back for Tom Drury, and I think should get a favorable stalking voyage. But again, I mean, there's several ways to go in here, and I'll be spreading deep. Not sure if you had a stronger opinion.
I mentioned Summer Anthem as intriguing. Speaking Scout, I thought was a little interesting. It's a fun group, and I can understand taking a wide approach.
Yeah, I think so. I don't necessarily know if I trust Grand Sonata at 7-2, although it should get a good trip. I thought Smoking Tea ran well on the American turf, but no real excuse. Major General to me, I think it's a little stabby here, trying the turf. James Jones was very impressive in the maiden-breaking win here. For Chad, could take another step forward, impressed that one was able to win at the mile and an eighth distance over this turf course. Did get a real good trip that day, but yeah, several ways to go, no real strong opinion, but did land on an 8-1 morning line shot in the end.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34, and check the Twin Spires offers to opt in for the various opportunities. I appreciate it, Scott, and we'll catch up. Probably catch you and James for your, at least your Belmont and highlight tabs next week.
Sounds great, Steve. You have a great weekend, and best of luck in all your endeavors.
Scott Shapiro, folks, let's take a break here a little bit after the top of the hour. We've got Marcus Hirsch next and Hammer in the second hour, and then we'll check in with Dave Grenig. We'll listen to the Epsom Oaks, and we've got Rich Eng as well, and Gus with some plays. Let's step away back after this. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races continues here on Sirius XM.
On Sirius XM Radio.
you're betting on. How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping. Continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.